University.
Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Shear with help from Stephen Amos Jr. at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amomentofscience.org. I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander. It's 2:40. In sports, the St. Louis Blues play the Dallas Stars tonight in Dallas. The Blues are coming off a 3-3 homestand. The Stars are getting leading goal scorer James Neal back from a two-game suspension. Marian Hossa is expected to make his debut with the Chicago Blackhawks tonight in San Jose against the Sharks. The free agent had shoulder surgery after he was signed to a nearly $63 million contract in the offseason. The Blackhawks have now won 7 in a row. They're looking for their 8th tonight. Number 20, Illinois, defeated Wofford 78-64 with a second-half run in the Las Vegas Invitational last night. Dimitri McCamey scored 21 points, including a three-pointer that beat the halftime buzzer. The Illini are now 4-0 on the season. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible with support from Art Mart in Lincoln Square, Urbana. Art Mart offers unique items for the home and kitchen and a deli and bakery featuring Reuben's chocolates. Art Mart is pleased to support public radio.
It's 2:42. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Radio. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to a generous gift from Robert and Alice Campbell. There is no recession at the Dry Dock Brewing Company. Reporter Kirk Sigler from member station KUNC has the story of a brewer in Aurora, Colorado, who is expanding thanks to loyal customers, a tasty product, and a bit of help from the stimulus bill.
For Kevin DeLang, the fermenter is where it all comes together, his extra special bitter ale, and lately, his profits.
And then it will spend the next 2 weeks in the fermenter. And that's when the yeast really works its magic. It eats that sugar and turns it into alcohol and carbon dioxide.
And then beer, which DeLang can make a lot more of now that he's bought a sixth fermenter at his modest brewery. Dry Dock is tucked away in a strip mall in the Denver suburb of Aurora. DeLang beams as he stands next to the shiny silver 15-foot-high tank.
The primary bottleneck is the number of tanks that you have to actually ferment the beer. So you can only make as much beer as you have room to put it to ferment at one time.
DeLang expanded his successful brewery into this new, bigger space this past summer. The federal stimulus bill helped him get a waiver on the closing costs of his Small Business Administration loan. All he had to do was promise to reinvest the money in his business, and the $20,000 he saved just happened to be the cost of a new fermenter.
That single fermenter probably created a half a job.
But DeLang says it's creating ripple effects across his business. He hired that halftime brewer because there's more beer to be made.
And then more customers come in. We need more bartenders. We've gotten so busy that now I need a full-time bar manager to handle that.
And possibly a new bookkeeper so that DeLang can concentrate on strategy and marketing. All this is quite a milestone for a business that has just 7 full-time staffers. One of those is head brewer Bill I. He was hired on this summer. I was lucky to score the gig. Earlier this year, he was laid off from a larger chain brewery nearby.
It's not like I'm an IT guy and there's so many firms out there. There's a limited number of breweries in the city, and when I was looking for a job, I talked to everybody. And when I say everybody, we're talking 15 places, 10 places. I mean, there's just not that many breweries.
But I still figures the so-called craft brewing industry is fairly recession-proof. And if Dry Dock is any indication, beer drinkers are staying loyal even in tough times. Take regular Tobin Anderson. He's sipping an India Pale Ale in the brewery's spacious new bar during a busy happy hour. At 6.4% alcohol by volume, he says an IPA goes a lot further than a domestic, like Coors or Bud.
I mean, you get more bang for your buck.
And Anderson says he doesn't mind paying the premium, $4 a pint.
You know, it's excellent beer. You know, you pay a little more, but it's worth it to me, plain and simple.
Down the wood-paneled bar, owner Kevin DeLang is pouring a sample of Bismarck Alt, which won a gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival this fall.
The Alt beer's a German style. It's amber in color, really clear, has a little bit of hop bitterness at the finish.
Dry Dock also won Small Brewery of the Year at that festival. DeLang thinks that was due to the brewery's impressive 4-year run. Sales have grown by at least 30% each year.
Cheers.
Cheers. And DeLang is already looking at expanding again, possibly into a warehouse space, so we can start bottling and shipping beer around Colorado. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Sigler in Denver.
It's 2:45. This is the Afternoon Magazine. In October of 2003, an ambitious oral history project was launched to record stories of everyday people. The underlying principle was this: our stories, the stories of everyday people, are as interesting and important as the celebrity stories we're bombarded with by the media every minute of the day. Soon the project had a motto: listening is an act of love. The Oral History Project is StoryCorps. StoryCorps works like this. Two people who are important to one another engage in conversation about their history. They do it in a StoryCorps story booth. And the stories are then preserved in a special archive at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. Well, we needn't sit in a StoryCorps story booth to have a conversation with someone who's important to us and preserve that story, that conversation. Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, this coming Friday, is the National Day of Listening. To learn more about the Day of Listening and StoryCorps, I spoke with StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. Dave, when and how did you come to understand that listening is an act of love?
That's a great question. I guess I've always known that, but I've seen it much more clearly over the last 6 or so years since StoryCorps came to be. You know, the phrase listening is an act of love came out of one of the facilitators who are kind of the core workers of StoryCorps. Those are the people, when you come into a booth, who sit with you and help you through the interview session and kind of bear witness to the session. One of the facilitators in the first year of StoryCorps came up with that term, listening is an act of love. And it really resonated and has proven true for tens of thousands of interviews through StoryCorps and now through projects like the National Day of Listening, which is happening on Friday. You know, I think that stopping and looking a loved one in the eye and asking them, you know, tell me about your life, is a way of telling someone how much they mean to you, and telling them that they matter and telling them they won't be forgotten.
What do you hope people will do specifically on the National Day of Listening Friday?
We're asking the whole country to take an hour out on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and you do an interview with someone who matters to you. It can be a loved one in your family. It can even be someone who is in a veterans hospital or at a food pantry, and honor someone by listening to them about their life. People can use any equipment that they have around the house. It can be your computer or many cell phones now record. You can get a very inexpensive digital recorder at your local electronics store, get together with your neighbors, everybody pitch in $15, and you'll have a great digital recorder. And interview a loved one. We have a website, nationaldayoflistening.org, that talks you through the very, very, very simple process and gives you questions you may want to ask and tips on how to do the interviews. And I can guarantee two things. You know, one is that when you interview someone, no matter how well you think you know them, you're going to find out something about them you didn't know before. And I can also guarantee that you're not going to regret it.
Yeah.
You know, I hear from people every day as I travel the country talking about StoryCorps. People tell me, I wish I had interviewed my grandfather, but I didn't. I just didn't take the time to do it. I wish I had my mother's voice on tape, my brother. And I hope that after Friday and every National Day of Listening to come, there'll be a few less people who say that, because it is really, really easy to do this kind of interview, and you really don't want to wait.
Yeah. The question generator is terrific. The questions are very straightforward. Mm-hmm. But as we know from StoryCorps, they can elicit amazing stories, these very straightforward questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the kind of questions we suggest asking through StoryCorps are the big life questions, like how do you want to be remembered? What are the most important lessons you've learned in life? And, you know, essentially this project, this exercise, is a transmission of wisdom. It's a way to kind of sum up your life as best that's possible in 45 minutes, and it is possible. These conversations can often be profound. They're often moving, and the answers are often surprising. You know, we have a new StoryCorps book coming out in a bunch of months called Mom, and it's stories of moms, and I was just writing the afterword to the book. And I write about taking my own mom to the StoryCorps booth, and, you know, I'm close to my mom. I know her very well. I talk to her all the time. And when I took her to StoryCorps, I thought it was going to be, you know, nice to take an hour out of a really busy day and have a conversation with my mom, but that I wouldn't really learn anything new. And, you know, when I took her into the booth and closed the door, when we walked out an hour later, the only two things that I had known before walking into the booth was, you know, her name and what the date was. And other than that, everything she told me was unexpected and new and wonderful. So I think that's what you can expect to have happen in these interviews.
How do people who have participated in the StoryCorps project feel about the experience once they've completed their interview in a StoryCorps booth?
We've done about 30,000 interviews so far, and most of those are done in pairs. So about 55,000 people have been in the booth together so far. And, you know, I get emails every day from participants saying that that those 40 minutes were among the most important 40 minutes in their lives. So I think people, you know, do have really profound experiences in the booth. And I also, you know, get emails about the broadcasts on Friday on Morning Edition all the time, with people talking about how much those mean to them and how they make them, you know, cry. Every week I get emails about the mascara running in the car and pulling the car over and that sort of stuff. And I don't think it's because these stories are sad. I think it's because when we hear these stories, we're hearing kind of humanity at its best. We're surrounded by so much phoniness everywhere other than in public radio, of course. but when you hear a voice that's speaking from a place of truth, when you hear humanity at its best, you're almost walking on holy ground. And I think that these stories, when we listen to them, tell the real American story. You know, that the real American story is not Balloon Boy and Ponzi schemers and so forth. It's the people around us. It's our grandparents or our bus driver. And it's these everyday acts of courage and kindness and poetry and grace that define who we are as Americans. And that's what we're celebrating through the National Day of Listening and what we're celebrating through StoryCorps every week on the radio and on the web and in books and so forth.
I'd like to ask you one of the questions from the question generator.
Uh-oh.
It is, who has been the biggest influence on your life?
That's a good question. You know, I think probably both my mom and my dad equally have been huge influences on my life. And that's what, you know, one of the interesting things about StoryCorps that I was just writing about in this mom's book is that even when someone's, you know, 95 or 100 years old, when they come into the booth, the first things they're going to talk about often are their mom and their dad. And, you know, obviously the two of them had a huge influence. I'm not 95 yet. I guess I'm getting close. So they had a big influence. But I also have an 18-month-old son who has changed my life in ways I never would have imagined, and a wife who is such an incredible ally and source of strength. I guess it goes both ways. So, you know, what happens in StoryCorps, and when you ask these kind of questions, is it really reminds you what's important, who matters, and how lucky we are to be alive.
Yeah. When you and your wife learned that a child was on the way,
yeah,
what did you think? What was your immediate reaction to that news?
Well, my wife was. I was always the driving force behind having a kid, and my wife was never does anything without it being of her own volition, but was much more questioning about what that was going to be like, and was, you know, really concerned. She's a journalist, and was concerned about the impact that having a kid was going to have on her career, and looked at many other women journalists and how difficult it's been for them, and was sick of seeing the men getting all the support in their career and the women, you know, having to sacrifice. So she made me sign a contract, a 50-50 contract on having a kid, which I gladly did. I think that might have been on our first date, actually, when I asked her to marry me. Mm. I think that she was nervous, and I was a little bit nervous also. But of course, when we had the kid, and the last 18 months, you know, every day has been a joy beyond belief. And, you know, every day is newly the happiest day of our life. So One of the things that you hear in StoryCorps so often from people who are parents is that when they talk about what they've left behind that's most important, and this isn't for everybody, but a lot of parents say that it's their kids. So I listen closely to that in those StoryCorps interviews, and there's no better decision I've ever made than having this kid, other than maybe marrying my wife. Mm-hmm. But that is much more personal information about me than I've probably ever given out in any interview, and more than your listeners want to hear.
And did I hear you correctly that you asked your wife to marry you on the first date?
I did. I did. She thought I was insane, but I'm a very determined person, and I know a good thing when I see it.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me, and happy Thanksgiving to you
thank
and
you,
your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. This was a lot of fun.
Dave Isay is an award-winning radio journalist and the founder of StoryCorps. The National Day of Listening is Friday, November 27th. You'll find more information and the question generator online at www.nationaldayoflistening.org.
WILL programs are made possible with support from Art Mart in Lincoln Square, Urbana. Art Mart offers unique items for the home and kitchen and a deli and bakery featuring Reuben's chocolates. Art Mart is pleased to support public radio.
Earth and sky.
Climate change combined with the quest for enough energy for the globe plus economic recovery are hugely complex issues.
You're listening to Roxanne Desick, head of international government relations for Shell. Desick said businesses will need to work together with governments all over the world to successfully control global warming from burning fossil fuels.
It's really going to take more than governments alone to solve this problem. Industry, all industry, but my industry in particular, needs to be able to provide expertise. And then government really needs to step in with solid regulatory frameworks so that we have clear signals on where we can invest to provide good solutions.
One regulatory framework proposed is cap and trade, which caps a country's CO2 emissions and allows trading of permits to emit. Speaking for Shell, Desick said it will provide incentive to lower emissions and encourage cleaner technologies, such as carbon capture and storage, a way to safely store carbon emissions underground.
We really look to Copenhagen to recognize carbon capture and storage, or CCS as it's called, as an internationally accepted tool to mitigate CO2 emissions. And we also need decisions around funding it so that it's funded and supported not just in developing economies, but in the developing world as well.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana. Their 8-week winter session in Iyengar Yoga starts November 30th with special classes for beginners, women, seniors, and plus sizes. Gift certificates are available. Information at